Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hale Varsity Radio.
For the second time in NCAA tournament history, a 16 has beaten a 1, and the FDU Knights are that 16.
The Zags make it 8 straight, Sweet 16s.
Final seconds come off the clock. How sweet it is for Miami.
And Creighton has done it. Punches. It's Sweet 16 ticket for the second time in 3 years.
A lot of great voices. Lisa Byington, Kevin Kugler, my very own, my bestie. As we are closing out Coffee and Cream, appreciate you fine folks being a part of what we do with a guy that does a lot of good work for CBS Sports. We won't give a chance to take advantage of his football acumen, but he'll cover that too for CBS Sports. Right now we're talking hoops and in particular madness as we welcome in David Cobb from CBS Sports. David, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm doing well. Pretty excited about the slate we've got ahead the next few days.
Hey, how often... because it seems like this nationally, and I get it, left coast, it used to be football after dark, but Gonzaga and UCLA are going to take to court. It's a fantastic matchup, and for some reason, I get the sense it's an afterthought. How is that possible?
It shouldn't be an afterthought, I can guarantee you that, because if recent history is any indication, probably going to have a legendary type of game there. You remember it was just 2 years ago that Jalen Suggs hit that buzzer beater in the COVID tournament for Gonzaga to beat UCLA. One of the greatest shots in NCAA tournament history.
Johnny Juzang was going bananas.
Yes. It was a classic. And I don't know if we've forgotten about that because we just want to forget everything that happened in a, quote, COVID bubble. But that was a thriller. And you got some of the main characters from that game back. Drew Timmy still around. Julian Strotter played a role for Gonzaga. He's one of the key players now in this game. And then, of course, with UCLA, you still have Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell and those guys. So I think we've got all the ingredients of a really good game there.
David, wanted to ask you about Creighton. So, you know, obviously, you know, Omaha, Nebraska here. Assuming they can get past Princeton, which I'm not taking for granted, because I know Princeton's hyper efficient. But if they do, is Alabama beatable by a team like Creighton if Alabama advances as well? Because you just look at high-end talent, and Alabama's obviously got Brandon Miller. Creighton doesn't have anyone of that high-end NBA lottery caliber. How does that potential matchup work in your head?
Yeah, it's Alabama is beatable. Now, it's a 1-in-10 type of chance, mm-hmm. even for a team as good as Creighton. Because what you need for Alabama to go down this weekend is a bad game really on both ends of the floor. And the only time that's really happened to Alabama this season was back in January. They went to Oklahoma for the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Random game. They were on a roll. I think they'd already made it up to number one. And they just got spanked, lost by 24 to a team that didn't even make the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And it was a bad shooting night, and then Oklahoma had some dudes who just started going off. And I do think Creighton has those type of dudes who can go off. I saw Baylor Shireman in person put the team on his back on the road at Seton Hall, you know, a month or so ago, and was really impressed with that. And then, of course, you know, Trey Alexander can do that, and obviously Kalkbrenner in his own way can take over a game. So, yes, Creighton is capable of beating Alabama, but you need that rare combination of Alabama being off offensively and then off defensively as well, because they're just elite on both sides of the ball. But Creighton is disciplined enough. Creighton is well coached enough. And the thing that I kind of like about the matchup for Creighton is, you know, they don't go super deep. So especially with Mason Miller out, I mean, you know, they're gonna have guys out there who get in a rhythm, and if that's a good rhythm, then it could give Alabama trouble.
And it's interesting because all the games tonight, and I love it, are 5 points or less according to Vegas. So whether that means they'll be tight games, the expectation level is that they'll be tight, mm-hmm. and that includes Tennessee and Florida Atlantic. Is Tennessee underappreciated because of their health and lack of offensive prowess, or is Florida Atlantic finally getting the respect that their regular season says they should get?
Yeah, I think it's probably the second part of that, because FAU is not a fluke. They aren't a cute Cinderella team, really. That's Princeton. That's Fairleigh Dickinson. So FAU is just an all-around good basketball team with some dudes. I mean, they are one of the deepest teams in the country. They're a really good three-point shooting team, and they get after you defensively. There's just not a ton of obvious weaknesses on FAU's part. They rebound well, even though they're small. That's one thing I think this tournament has taught us, is that rebounding isn't so much about size as it is about effort, as it is about a coordinated strategy to attack the glass. And if you have that, you can mitigate a size disadvantage, and FAU has a size disadvantage against Tennessee. I'm curious to see how this game plays out, because the types of teams that have given Tennessee problems this year are those FAU teams, those undersized, up-tempo teams that can get hot from the outside, because on those rare instances when you can take advantage of Tennessee's defense with a group like that, Tennessee just doesn't have the offensive firepower to keep up. So this is a tough spot for the Volunteers tonight.
I want to ask you about UConn and Arkansas. One of the more interesting matchups in my mind, UConn at times this year looked like the best team in the country. Arkansas with some really high-end talent and has been a little more up and down. What do you make of that matchup? Do you see a clear advantage one way or the other?
Yeah, I kind of like UConn, because I think there's just so many different ways that UConn can beat you. Really, the only way that Arkansas can beat you is to get you sped up, turn you over, get out on the break, or break you down off the dribble with some talented guards. But one, UConn's pretty good defensively. They don't have a lot of guys out there who can get broken down off the dribble. And UConn with Sanogo inside, he was so dominant on the first weekend that you're almost going to have to double team him. And when you do that, UConn has the shooters around him to make you pay for it. So it's almost like a pick your poison situation with the Huskies, because it's either, all right, let Sanogo do his thing on the interior, or be okay with UConn getting some good looks on the outside. And I think one of those two things is going to work for UConn and make them really tough to beat this weekend, because they have returned to the form that you mentioned. They were one of the best teams in the country at times this season, and they're starting to look like it again. So you never doubt Eric Musselman this time of year, for sure, but he has squeezed every bit, I think, out of this Arkansas team that he possibly could. And, man, you know what, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he makes another Elite Eight run. But I just think UConn is playing some really good basketball right now.
Maybe it's the Izzo factor, and it is March. And I did say early on, said it too much now, Michigan State seemed like the Big Ten team that had the most room for growth the last third of the season. But tonight, if it's a guard-driven game, which I believe it is, who has the better backcourt, in your opinion, Kansas State or Michigan State?
I lean a little bit towards Kansas State in that matchup. Marquise Noel, we saw what he did against Kentucky, and that's kind of who he's been all year. Undersized guy, began his career at Little Rock, transferred to K-State, stayed through the coaching transition from Bruce Weber to Jerome Tang. This guy has been around the block. He is a grinder. He is a gamer. Tyson Walker's been awesome for Michigan State. He's from New York, too. He's that gritty, undersized transfer, formerly overlooked. It's a phenomenal matchup in that way. But I like the complimentary piece there that K-State has and Marquise Noel has in Keontae Johnson. He's not really even a complimentary piece. He's their leading scorer. He can be their best player. Noel's maybe the more interesting story tonight. But Keontae Johnson, boy, he's got a story himself, having collapsed on the court at Florida. It looked for a while as though his career may be over. He resurfaces in the Big 12 and helps lead this turnaround with Kansas State. So I like K-State's backcourt. They've got a third guard there in Desi Sills, who kind of does it all. And I don't think Michigan State's guards are big enough to punish Kansas State for playing relatively small. So I like K-State's guards in the matchup. Front court,
Noel's got, he's got to take better care of the basketball.
But you're right. It's a guard-driven game, and I like the edge that K-State has there.
David, want to zoom out a little bit here with you. You've got half of your ones and twos are gone already. Who do you think has both the ability and kind of the cleanest potential path to being crowned as national champion?
Well, I definitely think Alabama's path is the most favorable. And no, don't get me wrong, San Diego State's going to try to drag them into the mud.
Oh, yeah.
Try to out-physical them, out-muscle them. Creighton is a very well-coached team. Neither one of these games is going to be easy for Alabama, but if you really step back and look at who has the most favorable path or who, you know, would have the most favorable betting odds to reach the Final Four as of this moment, it is Alabama. They are so talented, so deep. There's off-court controversy there that makes them less likable, but if you kind of take that away and just think about it strictly from a basketball perspective, if you're filling out a bracket, Alabama has the best path. And Houston, not far behind. I think they, you know, obviously deserving of their number one seed. You got a tough matchup with Miami. I like Houston. And then UConn would be another team who I think quietly, because of how well they're playing, has a reasonable path. But all told, it's Alabama out of that South region with the clearest path to the Final Four.
Did Notre Dame get it right with Shrewsbury, even with the overtures and the rumors and the Coach Mack stuff? Do you like Shrews in Notre Dame?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that, honestly, not all that much of a schematic departure from the way Mike Bray played at Notre Dame. Because if you go and look, Bray's teams in Notre Dame, especially the last several years, shot a ton of three-pointers and didn't always have that big-time bruiser on the interior. And that was very much who Penn State was this past season. So I think schematically it makes a lot of sense. Notre Dame, they're going to be getting a younger, more savvy version maybe of what they had, which I think is a good thing. Bray was really good there for a long time. And two of the last three seasons it didn't go particularly well, but they did win an NCAA tournament game a year ago. So that program isn't at rock bottom, even though they had a bad year. Shrewsbury is going to have a chance to come in there and scheme up the ACC at a time when that league is really down and really struggling. I mean, there's a chance here for Shrewsbury to immediately sort of make Notre Dame a basketball power, a top third of the ACC type of group. And I think what he showed at Penn State in just 2 years suggests he can do that.
David, appreciate your time, man. Enjoy the weekend. Should be fantastic.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate Ravi Lula, all our guests, Shane Schillerberg, Coffee and Cream. We're back tomorrow, 7 a.m.